Thank you, Dr. Irvin. I'd like to start by setting the precedence for this study. New York State and several other states in the country, along with our neighbors to the north, have already begun legislature or laws that will actually reduce the amount of pesticides or fertilizers we can apply to our home landscapes. And the purpose of this is that often it is proposed that the cosmetic application of nutrients and pesticides to a home lawn does not serve any type of urban ecological function in the landscape, so it's just done for aesthetic purposes. So we wanted to look at what type of implications there are to the surrounding water bodies of a turf grass site to examine what potential there is by applying these cosmetic applications of pesticides and nutrients to the potential or to the surrounding water bodies. So the initial reason we do this is, or the primary reason we do this is eutrophication. We have often, or most of us know that P is a limiting nutrient in freshwater bodies, while N is a limiting nutrient common in estuaries or brackish water bodies. And so that's the driving force for most of this research. And when we think about research in a hydrological sense, dealing with nutrients, nutrients can be intercepted or taken up by plants in several different ways. First, we have root interception from plants actually growing into an area where there might be nutrients stored or bound to the soil. And in regard to that, we also can create macropore space in the soil, which will increase potentially macropore flow or increase leachate flow. We also have increased water use or nutrient uptake along with that when nutrients are in solution. And then lastly, an area that we really want to strongly focus on is canopy density. There's been a lot of recent research that has strengthened the idea that an increased canopy density will actually reduce the velocity and the amount of water that leaves a site and potentially can contaminate surface water and reduce the sediment loss associated with that water body. And then lastly, it can also reduce the raindrop impact intensity, which can seal the surface of the soil and increase the water flow. So the objective of this study was to basically determine a quantitative relationship between lawn density and composition and the nutrient loading potential of that site. So in order to achieve this, we created a design that consisted of four turf grass plots, each consisting of Poa pratensis. And this was basically a step-down design where the first study was considered our most highly maintained plot, which received pesticides, fertilizers, and irrigation based on a common four-step program that you could buy commercially. And then from that point down, we basically reduce one of the treatments. So the next treatment, we reduce irrigation. The following treatment, we reduce pesticides, and there's no irrigation. And then last, our control plot would be our turf grass plot. So each one of these plots receives, the received fertilizers receive 147 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year and 16.1 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare per year. And then the pesticides that we are working with are 2,4-D, MCPP, bifenthrin, and pendimethalin, which are all commonly commercially available. And they do receive four applications per year. Now we wanted to compare this to other types of lawn systems, so we seeded we created a site that was Digitarius scamum, which is smooth crabgrass, at 100% population. And then also, whenever I refer to turf grass, I am speaking of Kentucky bluegrass. So a turf grass plot plus smooth crabgrass at a 1-to-1 ratio. And then last, a mixture of broadleaf weeds. We have Taraxacum officinale, Plantago major, and Trifolium repens. And we established a lawn cover that was 100% those weeds, and then also a combination of turf grass plus broadleaf weeds at a 50-50 or a 1-to-1 ratio. Now the turf grass, broadleaf, and the broadleaf mixture plots were all established from sod, and the 100% Digitaria plots were established from seed. This is a picture of the site. This is up at Cornell at the Turf Grass and Landscape Research Center. And basically I wanted to illustrate, we're trying to simulate construction effects if we were establishing a new lawn. So we stripped off the topsoil and drove a bulldozer over the site to highly compact and basically create a fragipan layer. And then afterwards we put topsoil back on the existing site to create kind of the worst-case conditions that we do see in our urban areas. Leachate collection was done by placing large lysimeters at the top of the slope. The lysimeters measured in dimension of 61 centimeters in diameter by 92 centimeters deep, and they were basically driven into the soil with a payloader similar to a soil core. We grabbed those columns, extracted them with the soil core intact, placed a bottom on that with a drain plug. If we were unable to pull out the core, we did extract all the soil, put it in the same way it would have come out in approximately 10 centimeter lifts, and compacted it to maintain the same bulk density. And you can see me there standing on a shovel while someone else does the work, apparently, up in that top picture. That's what I like to do. But when we measured the leachate volume, we measured the total leachate volume. We had no way to discern basically any type of frequency, so we just measured volumes from each storm event and recorded and froze the subsamples until we analyzed them. Our runoff collection was done by putting a channel gutter at the base of our plots, measured 13 centimeters by 120 centimeters long, and our plots measured 1.2 meters wide by 6.1 meters in length. And each rain event would then drain into a 100 milliliter tipping bucket that was recorded to an event logger that we could measure the volume and the frequency of the runoff volume. And we took 250 milliliter subsamples of that event, and we bulked both the runoff samples and the leachate samples monthly proportionate to that event so that we could get an average over that time period to reduce the number of samples we had to analyze. So the completed design was a completely randomized block design. We had four blocks, and we blocked based on slope because we kept the same characteristics of the existing slope. Our slope was quite drastic, ranged from 13 to 15%. And within those blocks, we had the 8 treatments per block. Maintained the site at 6.35 centimeters every week, and the clippings were removed from the plots. Measured variables. Every month, we took photos and measured density through digital analysis. We also took plant counts with a grid at three different locations in each plot to get a species composition. Measured slope, which I already discussed. Soil characteristics that could potentially influence the loss of nutrients, porosity, pH, Morgan extractable phosphorus, precipitation by rain or a weather station on site, so we have intensity, duration, and volume of precipitation. We also measured volumetric water content. This was done at random times, but this was also done in anticipation of a storm event to try to get an antecedent moisture content using a handheld TDR probe. And we also measured frost depth because there's been some research showing that a large portion of runoff volume does occur in the winter when over frozen soil. So we installed frost tubes in the center of each plot with a mixture of water and a dye that when it freezes, all the dye goes down to the liquid form and the water that freezes stays clear. So it's really easy to distinguish where it freezes to. So our environmental measurements, we collected total leachate and runoff, and this study began in early September of 2007, and the data I'm presenting goes through August 27th of this year. We measured nitrogen in the form of ammonium, nitrogen in the form of nitrate, and then also phosphorus in the form of orthophosphate, and then total bioavailable phosphorus and total filtered kaldol nitrogen. And all of these were measured colorimetrically. And then we also did measure pesticides on the plots that did receive pesticides. I will not be presenting that data today, though. So just quickly, some of the soil properties that we did measure as part of this study and some of the key findings that we do find. Looking at the average volumetric water content, and this is the antecedent moisture content that we typically saw of these plots before a storm event, you can see the yellow boxes represent the lower end. And we saw lower water content under the crabgrass plots and under the plots that received fertilizer and pesticide, while the plot that did receive supplemental irrigation, as expected, had higher antecedent moisture content with it. Looking at the frost depth, this was something that was very interesting to us. Actually, the turf plots that were maintained with fertilizer, all with fertilizer, reduced the depth of freezing, so they actually did not freeze as deeply as the other treatments, which may be a function of thatch. We're still working on doing some measurements in that area. Infiltration rates did vary as well, quite drastically among the treatments, which is a big predictor of runoff. The highest infiltration rates occurred under the broadleaf treatments. The lowest infiltration rates were seen under the crabgrass, which would be an effect of low density and poor rooting. And then we also saw a drastic decrease in infiltration rates in the turfgrass plots that received fertilizer plus pesticides. And so we're not quite sure why that is yet. And then if we do look at the average density of these plots over time, we see that the broadleaf plots had the highest density, but not much different than the actual turf plants. And I think that's more a function of leaf angle of these plants when you actually take pictures of them, because they're broadleafs, they lay over, so it's gonna skew that data slightly. But this is the most drastic point that we see here, is that the crabgrass plots and the turfgrass control plot that receives no fertilization, period, had the lowest plant density, and over time, the turfgrass control plot became quite weedy and very thin. So let's start with some of the results that we see. This is our total runoff volume here on the y-axis. And to set this slide up, I'll take a little bit of time because these are abbreviated, but I have our broadleaf plus turf treatment here, broadleaf here, crabgrass plus turf, crabgrass here, turf, turf plus fertilizer, turf plus pesticides plus fertilizer, and turf plus irrigation. So the four turf plots are always the four on the right. But what we begin to see is that we have the highest or second highest runoff volume occurring in the turf plots that receive supplemental irrigation. So that's going to be a function of that antecedent moisture content, where it's keeping the soil property or closer to saturation. So when we do get a rain event, we are receiving more runoff. And then we see that we get a higher runoff volume in the crabgrass and in the bare turf plots, which is more a function of the plant density. Now, when I look at a ratio and I put these on the same scale of cubic meters of water per hectare, we look at, and we have the orange bar is total leachate, the red bar is total runoff. We actually start to see that overall these numbers are almost the same, but leaching is by far the largest factor that contributes to hydrologic loading in our system. Now, unfortunately, the size of the screen might make this a little bit hard to see. These yellow lines here indicate every time over a time period that we applied pesticides, and these are the x-axis, 0 through 15, indicate our bulking periods for when we actually compressed our samples down. So this is over a two-year period. Each bulk represents approximately a one-month period. I have the year here, 07, 07, 08. They do overlap fall, winter, spring, so this is a bit confusing. But the main points I want to emphasize, looking at our ammonium nitrogen in runoff, we see a huge peak in mass loading of the fertilized plots during establishment period, and then basically over the rest of the study, we don't see very much at all with a few little blurbs, and we do see little peaks here even with the broadleaf species, so we are seeing some loading there. And just to reference for the rest of these slides, the green lines are the turf plots. When we look at ortho P, we see a similar thing here, a peak at the beginning when we have low infiltration rates. But over time, these numbers all start to go down. And then we start to see these peaks here in the blue lines, which are the crabgrass species. So this is becoming more a function of runoff volume, not necessarily a function of fertilization. When we look at the total nitrogen applied as runoff, with both ammonium and nitrate combined, we lose less than 1.5% of that applied over the entire two-year period. And that's not even adjusted for the control. It would actually be less than that if we adjusted for the control. And for ortho P, under our highest treatment, we lose approximately 1.79%. So not very much. So, and then in nitrate, just to sum this up, our largest contributor is nitrate. And basically, with the exception of our broadleaf treatment, there's no difference in loading. So quick conclusions. Regardless of plant type, low plant density and high antecedent moisture content were the largest predictors of runoff volume. Runoff volumes and nutrient losses were most significant during establishment period and greatly decreased with time. Differences in overall hydrologic loading were minimal among treatments. Overall nutrient loading in the runoff was less than 2% of N and P applied. Nitrate loss in leachate is not only a function of fertilizer application, but may also be a function of atmospheric deposition, mineralization, nitrogen fixation, but we did not measure those. And phosphorus loss in runoff is a function of runoff volume. So, if not overly irrigated, a lawn fertilized and maintained according to a typical four-step program poses no greater risk to nitrate and phosphate-related water quality compared to other lawn types. And with the levels of ammonium observed, further research needs to be done to clarify the potential risk to water quality. Sorry for running a bit long, but at this time I'll entertain a question if I...
No time.
No time.
Save it
so
for the end. All right,
that's my strategy.
Mark.